We're speaking about the Cambridge CAE exam today. What is it? And should you take it? Do you even have the level to enter for it? We are going to answer those questions and many more in this week's episode of
Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Hello, I'm Craig.
And I'm Reza.
And together with over 45 years of teaching English between us, Reza and I are going to help you improve your English and take it to the next level. Reza, good morning.
Good morning, Craig. I'm feeling very well. How are you?
You're looking very well. I'm feeling great. I'm really looking forward to this week's podcast. Do we have any feedback to get us started this week?
We certainly do. First of all, we have an email from Juan Carlos from Granada. Shall I read it out?
Go ahead.
He says, thank you for your great podcast. The podcast really helps speak. Oh, I think he means the podcast really helps me or us to speak English better. I think I speak okay, not bad. Sometimes I do not understand when people speak me, you mean speak to me, Juan Carlos, speak to me in English. How can I improve this?
That's a common mistake, isn't it? How I can improve this. You have to change the word order, Juan Carlos. How can I improve this? So Juan Carlos wants to improve his when he listens to English, he thinks he can speak okay. I'm sure he can. How can he improve his understanding, his comprehension, when people speak to him in English? Any advice, Reza?
Well, one thing you could do, Juan Carlos, is simply ask for repetition. If you don't understand the first time, you could say something like, excuse me, could you repeat that? Or, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. Or, could you say that again, please? Or something similar.
I didn't catch that. It's a very nice expression. It's not often used by students at intermediate level. To catch is coger, isn't it? So, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. I didn't catch what you said is a nice way to ask for repetition.
Can you think of any other things that Juan Carlos could do, Craig?
Well, I think the secret is to listen more, just to expose yourself, to listen to as many different ways of speaking English as possible. And by that, I mean, listen to the news in English. We've said this many times. Listen to songs in English. Watch films and TV series in English. Try to speak to people in your area as much as possible. And with practice and when listening, your comprehension will improve. And many podcasts, like this one, also have transcriptions. So you can go into the website, you can listen and read at the same time and try to look for any differences between what you've learned when you've learned English in written English and when English is actually spoken. The sounds, the linking, the weak forms, the stresses, everything we speak about on this podcast, try to notice those changes in spoken English, because it's very difficult to understand, Reza, isn't it, when people speak naturally?
Yes, it is. And as Craig mentioned, you could listen to transcriptions and you could follow the transcriptions for some of the episodes of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Don't forget that Arminda from Madrid, Alberto from Granada, another from Granada, and Angelica Bello from Madrid have kindly transcribed some episodes of our podcast. We'll mention the episodes at the end, so there you go. You've already got some transcriptions, Juan Carlos, for our podcast. And thanks very much to those transcribers.
Yes, and we'll tell you which episodes you can go to at the end of the podcast. And of course, if you want practice online using Skype, we'll be speaking about our wonderful sponsors, iTalki, later in the podcast. So keep practicing, Juan Carlos. Don't get depressed. Don't get sad. And I'm sure your understanding will improve very quickly.
There's just one more thing I'd like to add, Craig. In recent years, I've started doing this. I say to my students, read what you know, not what you see. When do I say that? When I ask my students to read aloud. Yes, maybe I'm a bit old-fashioned. Sometimes I get my students to read text aloud in class. I'm told by some pedagogical experts these days that that's a little bit old-fashioned. You know what? I don't give a damn. I think it's really quite useful. I wouldn't read out very, very, very long text aloud, but some sentences or short text, particularly at low levels, like A1, A2, maybe B1, I get my students to read aloud in voz alta. And I say to them, read what you know, not what you see. But time and time and time again, they fall for the traps. They know, for example, that carne is meat. But they read the word and they say, in a butcher's, they sell meat. I said, but you know it's meat. They said, but it's M-E-A-T, but it's meat. You know that. Read what you know. Mm-hmm. You know it's meat. Mm-hmm. Don't read what you see, M-E-A-T. And it's very difficult for foreigners to disconnect what they see and what they know. In English, you have to, when it comes to pronunciation and listening, you have to go with what you know and not what you see, because what you see is not going to tell you the pronunciation.
Right, I absolutely agree. And just to add two things quickly to that, go to your dictionary and use the phonetic symbols to help you with the pronunciation. In a good dictionary, online or paper dictionaries, they have the phonetic alphabet, which will help you with your pronunciation. And when you take Razor's advice and read it aloud, record it on your phone, play it back, and see where you can improve your pronunciation when you listen back to your recording.
Greg, I think we have some more feedback. Is that right?
Yes, we've got a voice message now from Gabriela from Peru. And Gabriela speaks about the CAE exam from Cambridge.
Hello, Reza and Greg. It's me, Gabriela from Peru. I sent you a voice message a while ago. And well, here I am again to ask you please to talk about everything related to the CAE exam, which is well known here in Peru as CAE. Well, because I am quite interested in getting this qualification. So guys, take your time and, as I told you, give us all the details related to it. Thanks for being awesome and for always being there for all of us. Once again, from Peru, big, 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 big hugs. Bye-bye.
Lovely to hear from you again, Gabriela. Thank you for your message.
Thanks very much, Gabriela.
We're not going to speak about everything related to the CAE exam and give you all of the details, because it could be quite a boring and long podcast, right, Reza?
Yes, and although Craig and I believe a lot in the power of podcasts, there are certain things which, to be honest, are better read. I mean, the reading and use of English and the writing of an advanced exam. It's good for us to talk about it, but of course you have to see it on paper to truly understand. There's just not a lot of point talking about the questions in detail. It's much better if you actually look at them. But we'll look at a few special points of interest, Gabriela.
And we've also put a link in the show notes to this episode to the Cambridge website. So if you go to inglespodcast.com/166, Gabriela, you'll see a link to the Cambridge English Exams website, and you can read all the details, all the information you need about the CAE Advanced Exam.
And also, can I just add that on that website, you can download free onto your computer some sample exams. So you can see examples of the complete exam in the format which the exam will be in. So it's better for you to download that onto your computer and then look at that in detail.
We did touch on the CAE exam. To touch on means to speak about briefly, to speak about quickly. Back in episode 24, when we spoke about many different exams, especially the Cambridge exams. So if you want to go back and listen to that, it's inglespodcast.com/24. And we also recommended in that podcast some textbooks that you could use to study and prepare for the exams. So Reza, as a general overview, to give people a general idea of what the CAE advanced exam is, what does the qualification actually show a prospective employer? What does it demonstrate that you can do in respect to your English?
Well, for most people, the CAE or CAE shows that you probably would be able to follow an academic course at university level in an English-speaking country. So that's quite an achievement. So universities in the UK and in Australia and other English-speaking countries usually accept C1 as sufficient proof that you could cope with, you could manage a degree course.
Just to clarify C1, when we say C1 or B2 or B1, we're speaking about the level in the CEFR, the Common European Framework of Reference for Languages, which is now become an accepted standard in Europe for language levels. So this particular exam, the CAE, as Reza said, is at level C1.
So if you got that level, if you pass the CAE exam, you'll be all right for academic study. You'll probably be accepted for most English-speaking universities. Also, it shows you can communicate effectively at a managerial level or a professional level. In other words, in a job where you have to manage and have a certain amount of autonomy and a good level of understanding to carry out your job. First certificate is useful as well for that, but advanced is quite a bit higher. It shows that you're really quite competent.
And I think, in fact, my experience is recently that companies who used to accept the B2 first certificate exam as a minimum English qualification for a job are now accepting or looking for people with C1, the CAE. I had a student a year ago who wanted to work for Google in Europe. And he went to the interview. They told him that he thought he would be enough with a B2, but they told him the minimum level now for Google, for example, is now C1. So it is changing a little bit with some companies, and they are asking for this C1 level.
Another aspect to the C1 CAE exam is that it shows that you could participate easily with confidence, not only in workplace meetings, professional meetings, but also in academic tutorials and seminars. A tutorial is a one-to-one meeting between a student and a tutor, or it could be a small group of students and a tutor. And a seminar is something similar where you have kind of group discussion. So you need to go into quite a lot of specific detail and clarify your answers and justify and understand subtle, that's S-U-B-T-L-E, subtle differences between aspects which could seem very similar, but at C1 level you need to know how to distinguish between small things which are not quite the same, which perhaps at first certificate you couldn't do.
And maybe speak about abstract ideas, right? I think the speaking exam in particular speaks about more abstract concepts rather than concrete concepts. So there's that. And there's also expressing yourself with fluency, with a high level of fluency. You're expected to do that at CAE level. And if you would like an idea of the speaking level for CAE, you can go to YouTube. Just search for the CAE speaking test or CAE speaking exam, and you can see students taking the test and get an idea of their level.
Craig, to take the C1, this CAE exam, how much time do you need? How long does it take?
It's about 4 hours. The speaking test is 15 minutes, and I think 4 hours is the written paper. So that's all the parts of the written paper that we'll speak about in a moment. people who are thinking of doing it, how much does it cost? Because I think the cost varies from country to country, doesn't it?
From country to country and from each institution. Everyone can charge what they want, but the prices don't vary very, very much in a country, because if they did, nobody would go to the really expensive places. So to give you an idea, in Spain at the moment, it costs about 218 euros in most places.
Right, that's a little bit more expensive than FCE, isn't it? I think that's 198 for the FCE exam in Spain.
We're talking about, should you be listening to this a long time in the future, in July 2017. Yeah, the price is about 218.
Yeah. So about 200 euros for both, really, more or less. Yeah.
It goes up a little bit as you get higher. And then the C2 exam proficiency is about another 15 euros more expensive. It keeps going up.
So how many different papers does the exam have, Reza, that are testing your English skills?
Well, like the first certificate and the proficiency, so the exam below and the exam above, it has four papers. It has the reading and use of English together in one paper, writing, listening, and speaking. So that's four papers. In the past, the reading and use of English used to be two separate papers. And you still see a lot of exam practice books which are for the old format of the exam, and they will have the reading and use of English as separate papers. Bear in mind, though, that the format now has changed. Although those books are still useful to practice the questions, but the format has changed. It changed, I think it was 2 years ago it changed.
2015, along with the FCE, they changed they gave the whole suite of Cambridge exams a makeover, which means they made some parts shorter. I think they took out one or two exercises in the FCE. So if you're going to buy a book to practice this exam, just make sure it was printed after 2015.
They made the reading and use of English in total a bit shorter, as Craig says. So when they were separate, they took up more time. However, here's the downside. If anything, you're even more against the clock now than in the old format. I think in the old format, candidates had a little bit more time, not a lot. But now with the new format, you're even more rushed. Se tienes un más prisa to complete on time.
So let's quickly give an overview of the different parts of the exam. So I'm going to hand over to you, Reza, to speak about the written part, because you are teaching that at the moment. But I do speaking. I'm a speaking examiner for Cambridge, so I do the speaking test. So I can tell you with absolute confidence that there are two candidates and two examiners in the room when you do the test. One examiner is speaking to you and asking you questions, and another examiner only says hello and goodbye, and they sit in the corner and listen. So it's a little bit intimidating. It can be a little bit make you nervous, but that's the format. So it's a 15-minute speaking test with you and your partner and two examiners.
Craig, when do candidates do the speaking part of the exam?
They could do it on the same day as the written test, or they could do it, I think it's up to 2 weeks before the written test. So you get kind of two separate appointments. One is for the speaking test and another is for the written, which is the use of English, writing, listening, etc.
The reading and use of English is the bit where students, in my experience, find it most difficult to complete in the time given. You get 1 hour, 30 minutes and not a second more to do eight parts with a total of 56 questions.
Wow, that's not long, is it?
It's not long to do. I find it hard. I've timed myself and I can just about do it in time. I get the questions right, but I feel really rushed. It shows that you can deal confidently with a wide range of texts. Could be fiction, newspapers, magazines, articles, extracts from books. It could be any type of text, really.
So people taking exams should read as widely as possible as they're studying, yeah, from many different reading sources.
Yeah, and both formal and informal texts as well. So it tests that you can, there are exercises that show how well you can control your grammar and vocabulary. That's more the use of English side, and then the reading side, that you know how to read. Some of you might think, well, that's that sounds a bit stupid. You just read, right? You cast your eyes over the words and read, and that's it. No. It's more complicated than that.
There's different techniques.
Different techniques. Yeah. There isn't time to read every single word in closely in detail. There is no time. And Cambridge have designed it so it's that way. They want to make sure that you know how to read. So there are certain texts or bits of text that you just have to skim through. And that's S-K-I-M, really quickly, because you only need the general understanding or the gist of it. There are other parts that you need to go to the relevant part of the text where you get the answer to a specific question and read that little bit closely. That would be to scan, S-C-A-N. And then there are some questions in the particularly in the use of English part where, yes, you do need to read every single word closely, but not many. So you haven't time to stop and think, oh, what does this word mean? I don't know. Let me think about it for 2 minutes. If you do that, you'll be in big trouble.
And these are skills, reading skills that you, I'm sure you use in your own language, in Spanish. You just have to learn how to use these skills to the best of your advantage and ability in the exam so that you can do all of the parts in the required time. So you have to practice that. What about the writing, Reza?
The writing is also 1 hour and 30 minutes, but there are only two parts. The first part is obligatory. You have to write an essay.
How many words, Reza? How many words do you have to write in the writing part of the exam?
So there are two parts, and each part is 220 minimum and 260 maximum words. So that's an essay for the first part. It's obligatory to write an essay. And then the second question could be a letter or email, could be a proposal.
A proposal for what? A business proposal or what kind of proposal?
It could be a business proposal or it could be any type of proposal. For example, a typical type of question is, imagine that you would like your city to host the next student athletic games.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Propose your city and try to persuade whoever's reading the proposal that it would be a good
idea. Give reasons why it should be accepted. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a proposal. I mean, many people, of course, haven't written proposals, even in their own language.
Yeah. So it's a technique you have to learn and prepare for the exam.
The same with reports. A report is to give information. So you might never have written a report in your own language.
Unless you happen to have studied science or physics at university or maybe chemistry. But if not, then probably not.
So not easy. And the last one is a review. The review, again, could be about just about anything cultural. So the review could be about a book, a film, a piece of theatre, a piece of art,
a gadget, computer, an
app for a mobile phone,
a podcast,
a holiday, a hotel. It could be anything.
Yeah.
Mind you, these days people in real life do have quite a lot of experience writing reviews. Thanks to internet, of course, anybody
can write. TripAdvisor, Amazon, hotel.com. Yeah.
Yeah. So we all write probably more reviews than we used to be honest.
Yeah, but I'm sure they're not those quick reviews you can write in two sentences. I'm sure for the exam, you need to show your ability at this level of English.
Right. And no smiley faces or smelly defecation icons will do. It has to be words.
No puntos suspensivos.
No. No sweaty faces, no flamenco dancers. No.
So moving on to the listening, I believe, is 40 minutes long, four parts, right? 30 questions. Anything else?
Yes. Well, again, it's a range of material like the writing. So it could be interviews, radio broadcasts, presentations, talks, everyday conversations. There are a mixture of monologues and dialogues. Bit of everything, really.
So as the same as the reading, you kind of have to expose yourself to many different sources of listenings all different kinds, fiction, non-fiction, news, current affairs, that kind of thing.
Right.
Interviews.
And everyday conversations. So go out and speak to people.
Speaking of speaking, we'd like to say thank you to our sponsors, iTalki, because if you are preparing for the CAE exam and you need extra tuition and some private help from a qualified teacher, what better place to go than our friends at iTalki? iTalki is a kind of an online marketplace that will connect you with a personal teacher who you can study with on Skype over the internet and improve your English and prepare for the exam. If you would like more information, iTalki are offering listeners of this podcast a free lesson, a $10 credit when you register through our website. So please go to inglespodcast.com/italki, I-T-A-L-K-I. Have a look around for a private teacher. We're sure you'll find one that suits your needs and your pocket. And we want to say thank you very much for sponsoring this podcast, Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Reza, which part of the exam, the CAE exam, in your experience, tends to be the most challenging, the most difficult for your Spanish students? What do they find the hardest?
Well, like most things in life, it depends from student to student. It depends on the person. It depends on their previous knowledge of English before they started to prepare for the exam. And also their natural strengths and weaknesses. Some people are good talkers, some aren't. Some people write well, some don't. Some people are good listeners, some are not. That's life. There are people who speak extremely well, for example, but have never written a report or proposal in their life. So they're going to find it difficult at first. Maybe not even in Spanish, as I said earlier. So that's going to be very challenging in English. But I think I can speak with quite a lot of knowledge about particular questions in the exam, which I find give my students a lot of trouble. It just so happens that this year, I've taught a lot of advanced classes. I mean, I've been teaching it for 25 years. But this year, I've had like 5 classes specifically preparing for the advanced exam in the new format. So I've really had a good chance to see what's causing trouble.
So with all those students and all those classes, what did you identify as common problems and common difficulties across this number of students that were studying with you?
Well, of course, there are plenty of exceptions, but on the whole, there are certain questions which stand out, that se destacan. For example, in the reading and use of English, many of my Spanish-speaking students frequently have trouble with the part 4, that's the key word sentence transformation, and the part 7, that's choosing the missing paragraphs. There seem to be a lot of mistakes.
That's interesting there, because it's the same for me with my FCE students. And I would add to that, in FCE part 2, the open choice close, like a gap fill with no choices, they found that incredibly difficult in recent years. Yeah.
Certainly harder than the first part because it's multiple choice.
Yeah.
You have a choice. When there's no choice, much harder.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, as regards the part 4, which is keyword sentence transformation, it tests your ability to restructure a sentence, but without changing its meaning. So practice in identifying grammatical structures is obviously very important, and also finding possible synonyms and being able to paraphrase. They're the essential skills because you've got to change the structure, but not the meaning. In other words, you've got to know more than one way of saying the same thing. So you really have to have a good range of English apart from accuracy.
And it helps with that part of the exam. If you ask the question, what is it testing here? Then I think it may be easier to answer. If you know the transformation is testing the passive voice, then you can try to remember the passive rules. If you know it's testing a tense, what is the tense change? If you think it's testing a phrasal verb, what's the particle? So I think identifying what it's actually testing will help you find the answer.
In the part 7, they test your ability to understand, above all, coherence and cohesion in a text. So coherence means that it makes sense, that If you say that, for example, the dog is a little black dog in one paragraph, that you don't say in the next that it's a big white dog, because that's not coherent, is it? That couldn't possibly be right. It's also testing cohesion. Cohesion means that things join up together and develop naturally, and things link and follow a natural kind of order.
The way it sticks together, the whole text. Yeah.
It sticks. How cohesive.
So
what helps? Well, knowing how referencing works. So sometimes it can be just simple words like it, he, that, or the younger man, the older man, or the doctor, whatever. If I say he anywhere in English, or I write he anywhere, it has to refer to someone. I can't just say, oh, he's my best friend, like that, because you'll say, well, who? Who is he? I have to have said a name first. So I say, oh, Craig's a good guy. He's my best friend. Oh, he is Craig. So we're looking for references forward on backwards. It can go back, but it can also go forward. He who enters this room will never leave. Oh, but you haven't said who he is yet. He who enters this room will never leave. Let me see. Dr. Smith entered the room. Okay, that he referred forward to Dr. Smith. So that can be tricky as well. Words can refer forward. They can refer back. And another aspect which is particularly important is linking devices. Oh, there's such a long list. Just to give you a few examples. Firstly, however, as mentioned earlier, in addition, on the one hand, on the other hand, although, all those type of words, they tell you the function of the text. For example, if I see the word however, I know, okay, I've got a contrast coming up. For example, he's very, very generous. However, oh, well, generous is a good thing. But if I see the word however, here comes the bad thing. However, he has a very...
He didn't buy me a beer.
He didn't buy me a beer, for example. So that's the bad bit. Or Valencia has many good qualities. It's weather, it's festivals, it's food. In addition, it's located near other interesting places to visit. So I added something to my list. So when you see these linking devices, they're a clue to tell you what's coming next, because you know there's going to be contrast or addition or consequence or explanation or some kind of function.
And there's also chronological order, which I think helps in this part of the exam. If you see a word like and then or later, well, later to what? There must be something that happened before in time for there to be a later. And with Reza's example of firstly, secondly, thirdly. So there must be something that came before. But that will also help you to find the correct part of the text.
I'm going to show you an example in real life now. As mentioned earlier, in the writing exam, reports and proposals are often a new challenge for some students. I began there with a linking expression. As mentioned earlier, so you know that what I just said has already been said before. Mm-hmm. Reports and proposals in writing cause a lot of trouble. What is a report? Well, it must be above all informative. And sometimes my students forget that. Report in Spanish is un informe. And what does un informe do? Informar. It informs. But a proposal is not the same, and students often confuse them. Yeah, they're kind of similar in the sense that you set out details and descriptions, but a proposal needs to be persuasive. In a proposal, you don't have to stick 100% just to the facts. You can kind of, let's say, spice it up a bit. Because if you want the Olympic Games to be held in your city, you got to make it sound really good. You got to make it sound perhaps better than it really is. You got to be persuasive. So a proposal proposes something that they want the target reader to agree to. Mm-hmm. In a report, no. In a report, you just inform and say, these are the facts. Perhaps this could be better. Perhaps that could be better. But facts.
Reports are very cold, calculated language, isn't it? There are lots of passive, impersonal words.
Yeah.
You don't use I or we, you use the passive.
Exactly. Craig, what about reviews? How would you describe reviews to our listeners?
Well, a review would be, hopefully, a balanced opinion or an evaluation about something. So generally speaking, you should give the good points, the bad points, and then perhaps at the end a recommendation or a suggestion in the final paragraph. if you are in love with a particular play or book or piece of technology, your review could possibly be 100% positive. But you should always try to be objective and give the reader a general idea of whatever you are reviewing.
A big problem for advanced level, also at first certificate, but for advanced, they make it a little bit more ambiguous, I think, on purpose, is when you write letters or emails to find the right register. That's the key, I think, to writing a good letter or email at advanced level. The appropriate style or register. For example, should it be formal or informal? Should it be serious? Should it be funny? Should it be technical, non-technical? Should it sound business-like, professional? Or should it be more sociable? In the exam, they don't tell you which style or register to use, but they expect you to be able to work it out from the context. And if you don't get it right, you won't get high marks.
So you have to know when and where to use contractions, informal language, phrasal verbs, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. I find for Spanish speakers, Craig, I don't know if you agree or not, but on the whole, if they do tend to make the same mistake, it would be being too formal when they should be informal. I would say that's more common than the reverse.
Yeah, and sometimes forgetting not to use contractions or to use contractions and just trying to separate in their minds formal language and informal language, because it is very different in English as it is in Spanish. And just making those differences clear in your mind will help you answer the question correctly.
For example, if you have to write a formal letter email, it's impressive. It's good if you write, "I would be very grateful if you would reply at your earliest convenience or as soon as possible." That might be good. But if you were supposed to be writing an email to a friend, inviting them to stay at your house, that's not impressive. You're going to lose marks for writing that, because it is not what a native speaker would write to their friend. A native speaker would write to their friend, "Could you please let me know as soon as you can so I can organize things," for example.
Exactly. Moving on to the listening, obviously we've said this many times before, the more you listen, the better you get. So listen to as many different and varied things as possible, including, of course, this podcast. Anything particular you want to mention about the listening that causes difficulties, Reza?
As far as the CAI exam's concerned, the part four, the final part, which is what I would call the double matching task. So you've got to match multiple choice, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, to the question. The problem is you've got to do two tasks at the same time, listening to one excerpt. So there's two questions for one excerpt. So you're doing multitasking, if you like. Mm-hmm. Maybe some people might suggest maybe women have a natural advantage at this. It's said that women multitask better than men. So doing the two tasks at the same time might be easier for female students. I don't know. But on the whole, many students find that really tricky.
And one more thing about the listening, if you are not sure whether or not to take the written test or the computer-based test, do remember that for the listening with the computer-based test, you are wearing earphones, which may mean, and usually does mean, that it will be easier for you to listen, because you will not get the echo and the sound bouncing around the room where the listening takes place. The conditions are always as best as possible for listening candidates, but many of my students have said that they feel more comfortable with the listening going right into their ear with headphones in the computer-based option.
Now, Craig, you've examined a lot of advanced exams in your time. What would you say are the possible pitfalls? A pitfall is a possible danger for the students in the speaking.
Well, you obviously have to come into the exam with this level of speaking, but I have had students coming into the exam that have no idea of the format of the speaking test. So it's a good idea to study that a little. It's difficult to prepare, but you should know what happens in each of the four parts. Go to YouTube, search for CAE speaking test, get an idea of what happens. part one, you get questions from the examiner. The questions are not difficult, but you might be a bit nervous when you first begin the test. So these questions in the beginning are just to get you to relax, to get you a bit comfortable. And they're very general questions about your job, your family, your hobbies, etc. Make sure you know how to speak about your job, your job title. Make sure you know what you've studied. And also practice a little your past tenses and speaking about the future, because you may be asked where you're going on holiday this year. You may be asked what you're doing next weekend. So make sure you can comfortably change tenses for part one. Part two, you're comparing two photographs. You're speaking on your own for a minute. Now, this can be stressful if you're not used to speaking English by yourself with people listening to you. So again, record yourself on your phone. Practice, get questions from the internet. There are many, just search Google for the CAE part two speaking test. Practice by yourself in front of a mirror, record yourself, listen to yourself, try and improve it. Anything else for the speaking that you'd like to mention, Reza, parts three and four?
Well, part two is perhaps the most stressful for the reasons Craig just explained. Part three can be tricky as well, though. In part three, it's the collaborative... Part three is the collaborative task, so it obliges you to interact with your partner, so at least you're not on your own. But they're looking for very specific functions here. They want you to discuss various options. So if there are different options, obviously comparison and contrast is useful here, just like in part two. But also plenty of other functions like agreeing or disagreeing with your partner, giving your opinion, asking for explanations, giving explanations, talking about the cause and effect of things, and many other functions. So the more functional language you can demonstrate here, the better. And in the whole exam, in part two, three, and one, and four, there are four parts, language of speculation and hypothesis is useful throughout the entire exam. For example, when they give you a picture, when they give you the three pictures in part two and you have to choose two pictures, they often even say in the question, they say, how might the people be feeling in these pictures?
So there's lots of speculation, isn't there? Language like, it seems to me, they could be, they might be, perhaps they are, if I were them, that kind of language.
Very important aspect. And in the part four, there are no pictures, but it's related to the part three. So imagine you had to choose, for example, a present to buy a friend. Well, in part four, they're going to talk about buying things or something like that, or presents. Yeah. So they might say to you, what is the ideal present for you? Try and get in as many modal verbs as you can. Say, that's a good question. Well, I could ask for something which costs a lot of money, but I might go for something with more sentimental value. Words like could and might to speculate, to show that you're not sure, tend to impress the examiners, I would say, Craig, no?
Yep, absolutely. So we hope that's given you an overview of the exam. If you have any further questions, please let us know. Reza, do you think there's a big gap in level, a big difference between the first, the FC and the CAE exam? How much study time do you think students should give if they've passed FCE and they want to continue to C1 to CAE?
Yes, I do think there is a big difference. I would say it depends on the student. For students who don't spend much time in an English-speaking country, they usually need two academic years. However, for those students who spend plenty of time in an English-speaking country, they might be able to do it in a year. So it depends. When I say two academic years, by the way, I'm talking about going to class and spending about 3 or 4 hours a week in class.
And studying like from October to June, perhaps, and having the summers of vacation, yeah?
Yeah. So 2 years of that if you don't go to an English-speaking country. But if you go to an English-speaking country, if you're there permanently for 6 months, you might go up to level C1 or even quicker. Who knows?
As long as, I suppose, you're reading and constantly studying during that time as well, and not just working and hearing and speaking English.
And Craig, talking about getting ready for the exam, what would you say are the best things you can do to get ready for the exam?
Well, if you're not in an English-speaking country, if, for example, you happen to be in Spain, but you want to have that qualification for work, then I would suggest, if you can afford it, going to a private academy and studying with a good, reputable private academy. Not everybody can afford that, so you can study at home with the books we've recommended in a previous podcast, and you can, of course, use online materials and online tests and practice yourself at home. But you need to be able to organize your studies well. You need to be able to plan your studies and prepare properly if you're doing it by yourself.
Would you agree that when you practice the questions in the exam format, that timing is very important for the reading and use of English and the writing?
Absolutely. You should be, as you get close to the exam, as the exam is approaching, you should be timing yourself at home. You should be setting your clock for your watch or your stopwatch for 1 hour 30 minutes and making sure that you finish all parts of the reading and use of English in that time. Because they do not tell you when you're taking the exam. Nobody will say to you, now move to part two, now move to part three. You decide when to move on to the next section. So you need to be practicing that at home.
By the way, a final tip, but be careful, is that you don't have to do the reading and use of English, or in fact the writing, in any particular order.
That's right. You can start with part eight and go backwards.
If you want. And a lot of students have said to me this year that they're taking a long time to do the part seven, which I mentioned earlier, the missing paragraphs, and still making a lot of mistakes. So my advice to them was, if that's happening to you still after a lot of practice, okay, do that part last.
Yep.
Do it at the very end. So that if you run out of time, that'll be the one that you don't finish. And since you often make mistakes in it, well, maybe you haven't lost much, because maybe you were going to get it wrong anyway. I don't want to sound pessimistic, just practical.
And never, ever leave any blank spaces. Always make sure you answer every single question, even if you guess, even if you just put down any answer, because if it's blank, I promise you, it's wrong. And I suggest to my FCE students, begin with the end of the exam, the reading tests, the longer texts, and work backwards. Because when you start the exam, you're very fresh, you have more concentration power, more energy. And then as you work back, there are seven parts in FCE. As you work back to the beginning from part 7, 6, 5, 4, then the texts get shorter. So you should be, as you're getting tired, they should be easier to read a shorter text.
But just to clarify, as Craig said, there are seven parts in FCE, but it's eight parts in CAI, remember, the extra part.
Anyway, if you would like to know if you have the level for the CAE exam, there's a link in the show notes to the Cambridge English Test Your English, where you can see what level you have. So all you do is go to inglespodcast.com/166, click on the link, and you can test your English. And there's another test over at examenglish.com, which is also recommended because we've been recommended that website for listening practice. Those are two places where you can go to test your English level. And now it's your turn to practice your English. Do you have a question for us, or an idea perhaps for a future episode? We'd love to hear your voice messages, and you can leave them on speakpipe.com/inglespodcast. By email, you can contact me, craig@inglespodcast.com.
Or you could contact me, Reza@belfastreza@gmail.com.
And for more detailed show notes, if you'd like to join our Patreon program, you can join our lovely sponsors, who are Nikolay Dmitrov, Anna Cherta, Pedro Martinez, Manuel García Betagón, Maite Palacín Pérez, Lara Allem, Maria Gervati, Sara Jarabo, Carlos Garrido, Zara Picasso, Mamen, Juan y Leiva Galera, Corey Finneran, Mario Reidemann, Jorge Jiménez, Raúl López, Rafael Manuel Tarazona, Agus Paulucci, Manuel Velazquez, Nestor García Mañez. Hello, Nesta. Thank you for sponsoring us. Juan Carlos, and thank you very much.
And we'd also like to thank, once again, Armanda from Madrid, Alberto from Granada, and Angelica Bello from Madrid, who I mentioned earlier, who have been transcribing some of our episodes. And between the three of them so far, we have between 131 to 142. Those are the episodes which have been transcribed.
Thank you. Thank you very much for doing that. On next week's episode, we're going to speak about Old English in reply to a question sent to us by Nestor, one of our sponsors. So thanks for the question, Nestor. We will be dealing with that next week. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
And fare thee well from me.
Fare thee well. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.